Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Henry is in the shotgun. Gets the snap. He's running left. Henry to the goal line. Wow. He's in. Game over. The Titans win. It's over. A gut punch loss for the Houston Texans in overtime. 42-36 as Houston falls to 1-5 and the Titans are a sparkling 5-0. Henry out of the Wildcat runs it in left side, bowling ball into bowling pins, and gets the game-winning TD in the extra session, and the Texans don't get to touch the ball.
This is one of the tougher ones I've had. This one really hurts. Offense played great. Gave us opportunities to win the game, and we did not finish the game on defense. We had multiple opportunities, and we didn't do it. And as the leader of the defense, I put that squarely on my shoulders. So this one is very difficult to take.
And don't beat yourself up, JJ. Bill O'Brien didn't leave you much out there in the way of teammates on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah. Good to be with all of you on a Monday morning as we welcome you in on Payne and Pendergast. It was the worst of times and the worst of times yesterday. Seth Payne, how are you, my friend?
I'm feeling, I don't know. I might not be good at my job today because I don't know if I have the heat to bring. I find myself feeling oddly optimistic after that game because the offense in the second half looked so good and Deshaun looked so vintage Deshaun that they're... The entire time I was kind of philosophic about it on defense as I'm watching the linebackers. The linebackers, Sean, I have to tell you, they were fascinating in this game because I don't know if I've ever seen anybody so thoroughly and completely duped by play action to the point where it seemed like on every run the linebackers were playing pass and on every pass the linebackers were playing run. They gave the offense a 4 to 5 to 6 step head start on every single one of those plays by guessing wrong on the play action. And all I could think was, well, this is what general manager William O'Brien has wrought. This defense, Sean, let me tell you this. This is why I was optimistic. This defense is merely 7 or 8 starters away from being a credible NFL defense. That's all you need. Just 7 or 8 guys. I just, my God. Oh, my gosh. Derrick Henry is an awesome back, but this was astounding. This is the kind of thing that an awesome back does against really bad defense.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I kept seeing people say, like, well, I wasn't that impressive because the Texans' defense is so bad. No. It was impressive because this is what you only do this against the defense if you're an awesome back. You know, the Texans have kind of hodgepodged their ways to some halfway credible defensive performances against lesser running backs. But this was astounding. This was incredible. And this was just a complete botching of the mental and physical side of the game on the defensive side of the ball. My goodness.
Seth, this is probably the most... I don't know. This is probably the most clarifying way I can put the way the defense played yesterday. They played like they really want Arthur Smith to be their next head coach. That's how the Texans defense played yesterday. Like, I don't know that you can put a better clinic in offensive football and play action than the Titans did yesterday. Now, Arthur Smith probably wouldn't get to bring Derrick Henry with him. And honestly, if they just bring a human being with a pulse and a couple working legs, they'll probably be as good as David Johnson is right now in this offense. But the Texans defense played yesterday like they really, really like Arthur Smith and they want him to be the next Texans head coach.
Hey, look at this. Look at all this play. I remember how we were clamoring for Deshaun to run more play action,
right,
for the Texans offense to run more play action, which I think to Tim Kelly's credit, they have done a better job of that. I think that one thing Arthur Smith wouldn't do if he came here and he had David Johnson was try to pretend that David Johnson is John Riggins or somebody. Like that, hey,
it's
going to be 3 yards and a cloud of dust and a path to glory for for David Johnson. Rich Gannon, I think it wasn't his fault and it wasn't stuff that was on the surface, stuff that should have made the Texans fan base angry, but he pushed so many buttons yesterday, especially when he said, well, they got to try to justify that trade for David Johnson. No, you don't.
Not
you
anymore.
Don't have to justify it at all.
Yeah.
The guy, if anything, Jack Easterby should be trying to minimize David Johnson as much as possible as he politically tries to, you know, distance himself from any of those trades that William O'Brien made. It was, I don't want to harp too much on the offense because the offense did what they scored 36
they
points
did.
In
they
regulation.
Yeah.
Hell, 36 points, I'll take that.
Yeah.
It's just the defense was so, so bad.
It was atrocious. The defense was so, so bad. And the defense actually made a couple plays in this game. J.J. Watt with the sack fumble and Bradley Roby with a great interception. Justin Reed had a blocked field goal on special teams. They finally did make some plays that allow you to be in a game where your defense is giving up 600 yards of total, literally over 600 yards of total offense. So they did make a few plays that allowed them to stay in the game. But boy, what a mess! What an absolute
mess.
That's
a big, that's an important stat right there because it might seem like, well, these days, especially if you're watching college football, is 600 yards that big of a deal?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a really big deal. Only 21 times since 1979. Has that happened? So once every couple of years, somebody will give up 600 yards.
Yes.
That's Seth,
I'm glad you pointed out that way because, yes, I know we live in Texas and it happens like three times every weekend in the Big 12 that somebody gives up 600 yards. In the NFL, it rarely. Say that again. 21 times since when?
1979.
So less than once a year, like less than once every 2 years, it happens. And it happened to the Texans yesterday.
I've got an even better one, though, and this is the really astounding one. Okay. I got both of these from Rivers McCown on his website, riversmccown.com. He, in turn, had gotten these from Stathead. Four times in NFL history prior to today where a rushing offense has run for 9.7 yards per carry on 25 or more carries. So like, when they're running in volume, when they're running 25 or more times, how many times does a team actually run for 9.7 yards per carry? Four times.
Yeah.
Just four freaking times in NFL history.
You know what? This is where I'm so glad for many reasons Bill O'Brien is gone, because if you brought that stat up to him, he would justify it, I'm sure, by saying, well, yeah, 94 of that came on one play. Like, if you take out the 94, then he's only averaging like 7.2 yards per carry.
Right.
You know?
And this is, sometimes that's a valid thing to say. If indeed, like on those other carries, you were only holding to 3 yards or carries,
right,
that wasn't the case here. But then especially, this is a valid combined stat because Derrick Henry is that rare running back. It's actually true when you say, well, he gets stronger as the season goes on. He gets stronger as the game goes on.
Yeah.
And the one thing that struck me about the Titans rushing attack and Arthur Smith in particular is the offensive coordinator, and one of the reasons the Texans were never going to have a good rushing attack under Bill O'Brien, that outside zone running scheme, it takes time. You have to be patient with it because usually it really starts to pay its dividends in the third and fourth quarter, mm-hmm, after it's tired the defense out, something Gary Kubiak knows very well. O'Brien would never have the patience for that.
Are you kidding me?
Right?
Not even close. You know, no.
O'Brien, it was like a series-by-series desperation mode of like, oh, maybe we'll try this.
Yeah.
Oh, should we try that?
Yeah.
We're going to try this.
Yeah.
And I think Tim Kelly started to use outside run more. He tried to chip away at it yesterday. So I give him credit for that. But, my God, Derek, They turned Derrick Henry into just an absolute machine yesterday.
Yeah, no, the defense is atrocious on this team. The linebackers stink, and Seth, these are the types of games that going into the season we said the Texans are going to have to win in shootouts. That's the only, and so, you know, finally the offense is playing up to the level where you feel like, okay, yeah, they can get into a shootout with these good teams and actually go blow for blow with them. The problem is, It basically, it literally turns into a coin flip. It was literally a coin flip yesterday. The Texans lost the coin flip in overtime and thus lost the game.
Yesterday was, you know what happened yesterday? Yesterday was like you hired a crappy lawn care company, that lawn care company being Bill O'Brien. You leave for a month, you come back, and you're like, oh my gosh, the yard is overgrown. I had no idea. How would yesterday was the equivalent of that's what Bill O'Brien did during the offseason to the defense. He did nothing with it. He was a crappy lawn care company entrusted to take care of your lawn, and he just let it go. So, of course, that's what happens.
Amen. Amen. All right, part of the reason, Seth, I was probably so salty coming out of the shoot and not as optimistic as you is because it was a bad weekend overall here in Houston. Not just the Texans losing in overtime to the Titans, but the Astros season is over. Let's touch on that in the next segment. And what is next for George Springer? We will hear from George Springer next. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610 on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Quick mention here, we are still doing, and we will be for several more weeks, our Texans head coach listener bracket. And the matchup today, a 2-7 matchup in the Casserly region, number 2 seed Brian Daboll, offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, against the 7 seed that looked a lot more appetizing about 3 weeks ago when his offense was putting up 600 yards against LSU. But Mike Leach is always fun to have on a bracket like this. He's a 7 seed. So a 2-7, Daboll versus Leach. Go to our Twitter feed, and the poll is already up for today at Sports Radio 610 on Twitter.
Well, there's a lot of Leach heads in Texas. I wonder if maybe that might be a more competitive bracket. Given the name disparity, people know Mike Leach's name, right, where most people don't know Brian Daboll's name.
You never know. I would make Daboll a favorite, but I think you're right. It may be closer, as Lee Corso likes to say, closer than the experts think. The Astros lose on Saturday night. Coming back all the way back from down 3-0 in that series, and you just felt momentum going into Saturday night, and unfortunately, they didn't get it done. Lance McCullers gives up an early home run, and they're kind of paddling upstream all day long. Charlie Morton was great. That's what he does in winner-take-all games. We know that as well as anybody here in Houston. And now the talk with the Astros turns to the offseason and George Springer. Do the Astros retain George Springer? Does George Springer hit the market? And if he hits the market, does he break the bank? With Mookie Betts already signed to an extension with the Dodgers, who, by the way, made the World Series last night. They win their series in 7 against the Braves.
Yeah. I only wanted that if the Astros were going to be able to
face
him.
Same. So Springer is the number one free agent outfielder out there, and he was asked the very first question in his post-game Zoom about his future in Houston.
It is a little early. Obviously, the season for us just ended, so haven't put much thought into that besides, understanding, who's in our locker room now, and I'll go from there.
One more from Springer. He was asked, these are the ones I don't like, Seth, where he's asked just big picture questions about his time in Houston.
Obviously drafted here. I've played my whole career here. It's been special. The city, the fans have really embraced our team, and it's been fun.
If there's no George Springer, Springer is part of the core group that I know Dallas Keuchel left and Garrett Cole was a hired gun, and there's all these things. And Adam Spillane's got a really good piece about it up on sportsradio610.com about the prospects, the likelihood, it seems like Adam thinks, of Springer leaving. This would be the one, Seth. This would be the first part of the Astros' soul, the brick in the wall of their soul leaving if Springer were to go.
Well, and he's one of those guys, obviously, that's been there from the very beginning of the turnaround. And we got to watch George Springer kind of grow up with the Astros. And the thing that struck me yesterday, I was reading, I don't know, I think it was David Barron was mentioning that how Springer had created Club Astros, where they have the nightclub atmosphere after a victory, which back in 2015 seemed a bit much. It seemed a little bit like, come on, guys. This is, what are you doing here? This is kind of Bush League. And then you realize, like, just through force of personality and energy and all of that, it was okay. Springer kind of brought fun to a team before anybody genuinely thought that they should be having any fun. And I think it was part of what made them special and so lovable and so likable above and beyond just flat out winning. I think if you compare the Astros to the Rockets over the last 5-6 years, one of the big differences was, man, it's just so easy to love these Astros, and George Springer was a huge part of it. So that part is hard. I also would point out that there couldn't be a bigger difference between Gerrit Cole's post-game interview going into free agency and George Springer. Gerrit Cole, who had to make the distinction that he was there as a representative of himself.
Right.
Like that he wasn't representing the Astros, he was representing himself. George Springer is still very much about the team.
The fun thing will be watching all these teams and fan bases that got so up in arms about the Astros banging on garbage cans and cheating, watching all these fan bases crawl over themselves to get their greasy paws on George Springer, who is, look, Seth, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say he is one of the greatest postseason players of this modern era of baseball. He is the epitome of October baseball, George Springer. He's great in these clutch situations.
He's the exact opposite of Cody Bellinger and Clayton Kershaw,
right,
who are regular season heroes but then turned to dust in the postseason. Although Bellinger finally had some good playoff performances this year.
Yeah, he hit the home run last night to send him to the World Series, but that's been the anomaly.
But for the most part, right, yeah. Up until this year, he was abysmal in the playoffs.
Abysmal.
He was atrocious. So I don't think you can depend on him to do that, either in the World Series or beyond. Where with George Springer, you can depend on him to be good in the postseason. And, yeah, I don't worry too much about the hypocrisy. If anything this cheating scandal has taught me, it's that human beings are human beings. And if there's a chance for them to pile on you about something, they're going to do it all season long. And for the next 7 years, 7 years from now, the Astros will have zero people from the cheating scandal on the team. The GM will be long gone, and people will still be bringing it up. So whatever. Mookie Betts is on the Dodgers. Yeah. Marwin Gonzalez, nobody gave a damn that he was on the Twins. Yep, I got it.
Do you think they retain either Brantley or Springer? Or are they both gone, do you think?
I think they retain one of them.
I kind of do, too.
And I think and this is where it's going to help, is that there's a lot of uncertainty right now. Mm-hmm. And I brought this up last week, and again, everybody just settle down and listen to me for 30 seconds before you
listen
type in with your hot COVID take.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly what's going to happen with fans in the stands next year. I think there's reason to be optimistic that fans will be allowed back. And depending on how you feel about it, I get it. Like, whether you think they should or should not, I get it. The important thing is that there's uncertainty. There's extreme uncertainty. And owners don't know 100% that everything's going to look the same economically. They're also probably reeling a little bit from the economic hit they've taken this year. So this has the potential to be a very subdued free agency period.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I might be completely wrong. But I think there's an avenue by which Springer, unfortunately for himself, because I feel like Springer deserves a big free agency payoff, it just might not be out there this year. In which case, hey, the Astros, Springer means a lot more to the Astros than he does to anybody else, not just because of his play, but the emotional side of it, the putting fans in the seats side of it. And I think there's more of a chance to retain Springer because of COVID than there would be otherwise.
The most disheartening thing would be if Springer signed like a short-term deal, but somewhere else. That would be the tell that he was, that the front office, even though it wasn't James Click that did it, it was Jeff Luhnow, that they really poisoned the water with him when they manipulated his service time back in the day. If he signed a 2-year, $45 million deal with some other team. You know what I mean?
And I wonder about that, because manipulating the service time has become the standard now. But those early guys like George Springer were the guinea pigs that they tried it on. And I think that players, when it happens to them now, are probably just more, not that they want to accept it, but they get it that that's part of the business. Springer was one of the first, but it was Jeff Luhnow. It was a whole different. I think he probably learned that lesson, though. That look, this is business.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's always business. And I don't think he's got any animus towards it. I don't think he would be like do it because he's got a grudge against Houston or anything. I think he cares. I think he's genuinely created just incredible lifetime friendships with guys on this team.
No doubt.
I think the Astros do get some kind of a hometown discount. Just don't expect it to be large. The other thing is, look, the Astros, hopefully, even though it was a different GM, maybe we learned our lesson about letting go of aging veterans like Charlie Morton.
Right.
You know, you don't let go of Charlie Morton, then all of a sudden, then you've got more of a pipeline than you had before. It was economically a really, really good deal. Just because George Springer is 31 doesn't mean that he doesn't have a whole lot of good baseball left in him.
The one huge Seth Payne key to the game on Sunday between the Texans and the Titans that the Texans missed badly on, and it cost them huge. We will talk about it next. Good to be with all of you on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Sean Pendergast and original Texan Seth Payne. The Texans lose yesterday 42-36 in overtime to the Tennessee Titans. Derrick Henry just ran roughshod over this defense yesterday. We're going to get into some of Seth's keys to a Texans victory from Friday and go through the checklist and see how the Texans did in Seth Payne's forecast for what they needed to do. But before we get into that, here is Romeo Crennel on the otherworldly talents of Derrick Henry.
Well, as I said during the week, the thing that you have to do with him, if he gets to the second level, then he becomes a much, much better back because he can gain yards. Defensive backs trying to tackle him have a hard time. And so keep him from getting to the second level. And when we did that, it was 2 yards, 3 yards, and not 94 yards, you know. And so everybody has to do their job. Everybody has to fit in place. And everybody has to be disciplined enough to understand that their teammate has a responsibility also. And when he starts into your teammate's gap, let your teammate take care of that gap, and you make sure you're taking care of your gap.
All right, two observations on Derrick Henry before we revisit your keys to a Texans victory from Friday, Seth. One, he, on that 94-yard run for a touchdown, when he got to about, I don't know, maybe the 50-yard line or so, you know, he was about halfway through that run, he hit another gear and put much smaller, what looked like should have been speedier individuals in the dust. He was opening up space between himself and Justin Reed and other guys chasing him. It's incredible to watch Derrick Henry go to work. I don't know how long Derrick Henry at this level of a phenomenon, a physical freak, is going to last just because his style is so physical around the line of scrimmage, and it's so much about delivering punishment to other human beings that even someone the size of Derrick Henry, it's going to catch up to him at some point, but holy crap. And then on the 53-yard catch and run in overtime, Lonnie Johnson is a large human being. Like, he is big even by big defensive back standards. He's a big, strong dude. Lonnie Johnson basically just threw his body in front of Derrick Henry like he was trying to make a bus slow down in an intersection more than tackle somebody, and got knocked out of the game, by the way, with Derrick Henry. Like, Lonnie Johnson was the only thing standing between Derrick Henry and a game-winning touchdown in overtime. And Lonnie Johnson basically just had to kind of hurl his body at Derrick Henry's legs just to kind of trip him up a little bit on that play. Derrick Henry's freaky is my point.
Which look, Lonnie Johnson had a rough game in a lot of ways.
I'm not blaming Lonnie Johnson. I'm merely pointing out the Herculean status of Derrick Henry.
Yeah, the big problem was with a guy like Derrick Henry, the book on him is, hey, if he has a muddied look at the line of scrimmage, it's hard for him to get going. But once he gets going, and if he has a full head of steam because he has a good hole in front of him, then it sucks to try to, it's like jumping onto a train to try to slow down a train. It rarely works out well for the hobo jumping. That's what they look like, John. Sean, they look like the Texans defense looked like a bunch of hobos trying to hop on a train yesterday.
They did.
As Derrick Henry was running down the field. One of the big, huge problems was A, lack of gap discipline. And it wasn't, this is the disheartening thing, it wasn't just discipline, it was just that defensive linemen at times were just getting their butts whipped. The other thing is this, the play action was so effective. The linebackers were lost in space, and the safeties. Justin Reed had a few really, really bad snaps versus the play action where the linebackers would read pass when it was run, they'd read run when it was pass, but they were a full, it's one thing to get fooled for a little bit. The linebackers on some of these run plays would take themselves 3 or 4 full strides away from the action before they got back and recognized run. And by that point, Derrick Henry's already 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, and it's a losing proposition. I also, will voice my weekly displeasure with Zach Cunningham's seeming insistence on not going to the ground when he tackles people.
Unbelievable.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I don't know if I've ever seen this in the NFL where it's a guy that just does not want to go to the ground. And he's like got this obsession with staying on his feet. It leads to some pretty impressive tackles at times because he has to throw the guy down. But, man, sometimes can I get a form tackle, right, especially against a guy like Derrick Henry?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, these linebackers are bad right now for the Texans.
Yeah, Yeah.
They're really bad. Your first key, and I guess you're kind of hitting it here, your first key to a Texans victory on Friday, Seth, and this appears to be the big one they missed on, you said the Texans defense built to stop teams like this, do what you did last year. And you're right. They've had good performances against Derrick Henry and the Titans in the past. Not yesterday. And,
yeah,
and you know what? And to be fair, not really with Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator for this team. You know, maybe back when it was a Ken Wisenhunt joint or, you know, Mike Mularkey or, you know, or really before Derrick Henry became this superhero at the NFL level.
That was last year. Arthur Smith was a offensive coordinator, and the Titans were in the middle of their long stretch. The Texans had a good performance against Derrick Henry in Week 15 last year.
That's true.
That's the only game I was really thinking about because this was largely some of the same personnel on defense, but they've just gotten worse.
Yeah.
It was really, really bad. And Derrick Henry is an awesome back, but not everybody allows Derrick Henry to run for 200 yards plus another 100 yards or so passing on him.
He has
receiving. My
three
gosh.
200-yard games over the last two seasons. That's the same amount as the rest of the league put together. They showed that graphic yesterday. One more on Henry before we move on to Seth's other keys to victory from Friday. See how the Texans did. Of course, they lost 42-36 in overtime yesterday to the point of a text message here. Hey, the Texans lost, but at least it was entertaining. That's true. At least it was a fun game to watch.
Oh, yeah. I'm way more optimistic about this than my tone might imply because as we're talking about mistakes that they made, I'm going to be upset. But the fact that we saw a vintage Deshaun Watson performance, yeah, I'm excited about the future because of that offensive
performance. Spoiler alert, they actually checked several of your boxes on the keys to a victory, but the big one that they missed on was the run defense. One more from Romeo Crennel. And Seth, you pointed this out to me before the show. I think there's going to be three plays. If you're doing a chop-up of Derrick Henry for this game and you're pulling three plays to remember from this game, the 94-yard touchdown run, obviously, the catch and run in overtime to flip field position and put the Titans in great position to go and get the winning score, and then the actual winning score itself where they lined Derrick Henry up in Wildcat. We remember that game in 2018 when Blaine Gabbert was the quarterback. They spent a lot of time running Henry out of the Wildcat in that game, led to a victory for the Titans. They line him up in Wildcat, and Seth, the Texans' defense looked like they'd never seen Wildcat before. There's guys running around all over the place, gesturing and not knowing where to be. This is what I appreciate about Romeo Crennel compared to Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien would have just said, we need to coach it better, we need to do a better job. Romeo Crennel did not mince words at all when it came to the Texans' inability to defend that Wildcat play in overtime.
Well, see, if we hadn't practiced that play, I would say maybe they weren't prepared. But that play was run in practice, and they should have been prepared. They knew it was the Wildcat. They knew it was the Wildcat. And they thought that they knew where the ball was going to go. And the ball started where they thought it was going to go. But then when the ball bent back, the responsibility had been vacated. And so there's a lot of space for the runner.
Yeah, any reason for Romeo Crennel to call a timeout there wasn't really present on that play. Some of the moving around before the snap was Bradley Roby doing a good job of saying, all right, look, Justin Reed was matched up on A.J. Brown initially, so Bradley Roby came over and pushed him out to pushed Reed out to be on the quarterback. Roby was on A.J. Brown and allowed Brennan Scarlett to come back in and be a linebacker. The problem was Brennan Scarlett thought that Derrick Henry was going to go to Derrick Henry's right, and he just overcommitted to it. By the time Derrick Henry bent back, Scarlett couldn't get to his responsibility and just ended up trying to catch Derrick Henry, which is a losing proposition.
He gently placed Derrick Henry into the end zone.
It's like trying to catch a cannonball with a lacrosse stick. Yeah. It's just not going to happen. And Justin Reed on that one, I was okay. I saw some people say, well, as soon as Derrick Henry lines up, you know it's not pass. Ah, false. And the Texans know this because they prepared for the Wildcat and because they saw the Wildcat 2 years ago. In 2018, Derrick Henry was actually 2 for 3 on passing. QBR of 67.3 on that season. So when he lines up in the backfield, you do have to be prepared for the pass. It's not like Reed can just completely abandon any of his pass coverage responsibilities. Yeah.
All right, so Seth's first key to a Texans victory on Friday was Texans defense built to stop teams like this. Do what you did last year. They didn't even come close to doing what they did last year in the game in Nashville. This looked a lot more like Week 17 with the Texans backups playing, where Henry, again, went for over 200 yards in that game. All right, Seth, your next key was, yes, more easy throws. Tim Kelly, build on what you did last week against Jacksonville with using pre-snap motion. How do you think they did there?
I think they did a good job. I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch. I don't know how much pre-snap motion they used compared to last week. But I do think that when they use that jet sweep action, there feels like there's more urgency behind it now. Before, I've told you that Kiki QT is the only guy where I ever felt really threatened to the defense with that jet sweep motion. And even though Brandon Cooks a couple weeks ago was almost decapitated by TJ Watt when they tried to run the jet sweep, I still feel like he's running it with a certain amount of urgency. Put stress on the defense. There were at least a couple times where I think Deshaun was able to peg what the defense was doing because of that pre-snap motion. So that and some of the easy throws, I think, you know, Will Fuller over the middle on that drag, some of the hooks and curls that they're starting to incorporate more, the Randall Cobb getting open on the scramble drill, I saw a more evolved passing game with more options for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, Clint and I were watching the game together. Clint Sterner and I were watching the game together up here in the studio, and that's what I said to him. I said, this feels more like what we were sold before the season started, right? When they traded Hopkins, but they bring in Cooks, they bring in Cobb, Fuller is a holdover. Smaller guys, but guys who can get open, guys who can beat you, you know, yards after the catch, speedy guys, guys that the speed needs to be respected, so you would hope they get some cushions and they can sort of do some take what the defense gives you kind of things. That's what it felt like they were doing yesterday. It really felt like what they've been doing the last few weeks. Deshaun talked about the routes that they're running to help get him into a rhythm.
Just got to stay ahead of the chains and keep those third and manageable, second and manageable, so we can have opportunities to get first downs and, you know, get in, you know, opportunity for guys to, you know, get the ball out quick. And, you know, a lot of teams, every team we play is not going to give us the deep shots. They know we like to take those, and we got a lot of talent that can go deep. So they're going to make sure that, you know, they're going to make us trickle it down the field and have those long drives. And that's what we got to do. I got to take what the defense give me and not, you know, force it downfield.
And that's where I think sometimes people hear take what the defense gives me and it feels like you're just conceding. You know, usually if it's not going well on offense, people hear that and they think that you're just being too meek. With Deshaun, it's something that he definitely and totally has needed to work on, and I think he's made improvements. But especially on, let's say it's 2nd and 10, that's where you got to take the easy money because, man, there's nothing more glorious in the world than a 3rd and 4. Your chances of going deep twice when it's 2nd and 10 and actually making it are a lot less than if you complete an easy pass on 2nd and 10 to make it 3rd and 4, 3rd and 3. He turned down a couple opportunities for that yesterday when he was under pressure, but I think he's also capitalized on those opportunities more. And you've seen, including that Will Fuller wide open in the middle, that's him actually being ready to throw short of the sticks when it's appropriate. Yep. Now he's on 3rd down. They've done a better job of that.
Yeah. Stop handing the ball off to David Johnson on 1st down, too. That's a good way to stay ahead of the chains. Stop voluntarily going into 2nd and 9. That would be my recommendation.
But I wouldn't mind. See, I might be the one person that's not fixated on running on 1st and 10. It's fine to run on 1st and 10 if you're good at running the football. They're just not good at running the football.
Yeah, that's what
I mean, like, you got to mix it up, and you don't want the offense to know that you're always passing on 1st down or anything. But they've got to get better at running the football. They did more outside zone running in this game, which I think is long term what they need to really get good at. So I'll take that as a win.
All right, the next one. This one's kind of null and void because he was inactive. But on Friday, you said hit Jordan Akins down the seam. Tired of hearing they can't go downfield because of cover two. Darren Fells had a big game. Maybe if we mad-lib Darren Fells' name in for Jordan Akins, this one still applies, right?
Yeah, and again, I think that, like you said, this is this is more of what we envisioned with Bill O'Brien's plan. And I'll give like a retroactive check plus to Bill O'Brien for having all that speed on the field. And at any given time, you know, for a large part of this game, Brandon Cooks hadn't gotten any targets. But who the hell cares? Because all these other guys were out there getting all these targets.
And then he had 9 catches in the second half.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It just kind of – well, it was funny because at the end of the first half, Rich Gannon said, well, Brandon Cooks has been invisible out here today. And I thought, well, that's going to change. That's exactly what they envisioned when they got it, and it's nice to see it start to come together.
The next one, bring back scrambling magic. These are Seth's keys to the game on Friday. We're seeing how the Texans graded out. Deshaun will likely never have another connection quite like he had with Hopkins, but wasn't Randall Cobb supposed to recapture at least a little bit of that? Let's get back to that, or let's see that this week.
Right, and I think it's pretty clear that they did a good job of that. The Randall Cobb touchdown was another one where, okay, this is what you're supposed to see. Okay, a guy's scrambling, Deshaun gets in trouble, what do? You come back to the ball, and you make an incredible catch in the near corner of the end zone. That was awesome. The other thing I would add to this is Deshaun as a runner on designed running plays, when they ran that veer option in the fourth quarter down in the red zone, my one request would be that is just as effective in the first quarter as it is in the fourth quarter. And it's just as effective at the 50-yard line as it is down in the red zone. The Texans have had this tendency to use it like break glass in case of emergency. Go ahead and get Deshaun involved in the designed quarterback runs in the first quarter, because then it pays dividends. Yeah. Then teams know they have to worry about it. Right now, teams understand and realize that you're not going to really run Deshaun Watson in the first three quarters or in the middle of the field or until it gets down to the end of the season or in the playoffs. It's in these critical moments that they need to watch out for it. Inject that uncertainty into the defense the entire game. Utilize Deshaun. And you know what else happened on that veer? Deshaun didn't really take much of a hit, did he? I'm trying to remember if he ran out of bounds or if he went down.
He slid head first at the one.
Deshaun's smart enough now. He's been through the ACL. He's been through the punctured lung or the bruised lung. He's going to be smart about taking hits. Do that more often. But it was nice to see in that moment, too.
Last one, Seth Payne's keys to a Texans victory, or what could have been a Texans victory from Friday. Matchup to watch, Zach Fulton versus Jeffrey Simmons. Simmons back from the COVID list this week. Simmons made some plays in this game, including probably his most crucial play was sticking that big paw up and knocking down the 2-point conversion, which we'll talk about in the 7 o'clock hour.
Yeah, he's got long arms, doesn't he?
He does.
That was one of those, or a couple plays in that game where I criticized Deshaun initially, and when I went back and watched and saw the hand in his face or the size of some of the guys in front of him, you get some of those botched plays.
He's a good player.
I think if I were to say the offensive line, they continue to have some issues with basic blitz pickup. They've improved, and I don't want to overly bash the offense on a day where they scored 36 points versus a really good NFL team. But that's one thing that they need to keep working on. There were also some times where Deshaun had a nice clean pocket and time to throw the ball downfield. And this is another key when I said, hey, don't just concede that you're going to throw short all the time when teams are playing cover two or cover four. If you're going to challenge those coverages, it takes pass protection and time for the plays to develop. And I think Deshaun had a few more moments with that yesterday because the pass protection overall has improved.
I would say more green check marks next to your keys to the game than red X's. But the problem was the one big red X was about size 72 font, and it was next to stopping the run game and Derrick Henry. And that was the story of the game yesterday. Nearly 270 yards of total offense from Derrick Henry, and the Texans lose 42-36 in overtime in Nashville to what is now just one of three undefeated teams remaining in the NFL, the Tennessee Titans. How will we remember the 2020 Houston Astros? It is a complex legacy that this team is going to have. Seth and I will break it down for you next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world.
Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.